So here with American producer and screenwriter Tom Fontana, and I think Tom, it's fair to say you're one of the people responsible for our new golden age of television.
Well, this is actually my third golden age of television, so I appreciate you saying that. But.
Well, back in the 80s, you created St. Elsewhere, which alongside The Wonderful Hill Street Blues was one of the great new ensemble dramas. That was driven by, it was a hospital drama, but that also delved into the doctors' private lives, which we hadn't actually had before on television.
Well, what was interesting about it is there was a tradition, a long tradition in America, certainly, of doctors who were God. Mm. And what we tried to do with St. Elsewhere was say, well, they're just people like us, and it's you have to really be aware of the fact that they're as flawed as any of us are, and they just, you know, it allowed us to sort of break a lot of the mythology about the medical profession, but it also really allowed us to explore an inner city hospital in Boston, and what are the lives of the people both who work there and who are coming in need of, you know, I mean, let's face it, the most terrifying moment of anybody's life is being rushed into a hospital.
Yeah.
So that's really high drama.
Yeah, but I mean, you guys changed the hospital drama at the same time Steve Boschko was changing the police drama. I mean, two staples of TV, two genres that have been around since television began, and you guys really did take it up to the next level.
What we were also trying to do was to really deal with the humor. We wanted the show to reflect the humor that the medical profession has, because their jobs are so grim on an ongoing basis that they have to develop a sense of humor. And we didn't think that had ever really been explored in another medical show on television.
And ever since, and elsewhere, I mean, medical shows have always had that element of comedy as well, as, alongside the drama.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's...
It reflects real life, doesn't it?
Well, when the humor is coming out of the tension of the situation, I think it's great. When it's sort of situational, you know, then you get sort of... it becomes more jokey.
Yeah.
We were trying to have it be, genuinely coming out of character.
Yeah. And then, of course, in the 90s, you know, Oz, alongside, you know, shows like Sopranos and Six Feet Under, you know, drove the growth of cable networks in the States.
Yes.
And, you know, the revival of, you know, quality writing on television, you know, which we're still seeing today.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I mean, Oz was a real adventure, and God love HBO that they were so incredibly supportive. I mean, they basically said to me, there are no rules.
Mm.
And in the 6 years I did the show, I think I got three notes from the network, which is an extraordinary low number. They were completely supportive of everything I was trying to do and encouraged me to even push it further. So it was an exciting show to do.
But what, I mean, from my point of view, what HBO did with it, you know, it needed to take risks to grow, being something that people had to pay for. They had to give people something worth paying for.
That's right.
And they were prepared to take risks, but they've proved that taking a risk can pay off.
Absolutely. I mean, you nailed it completely. Chris Albrecht, who was the head of HBO, had this wonderful philosophy of, I don't actually care if we get on the TV page. I want us to get on the op-ed page. I want us to get on the sports page. I want us to get in the lifestyle sections. And because his attitude was a show, a TV series should have a kind of cultural effect as opposed to just an hour of entertainment. Mm. It should become a part of the texture of people's lives. And, so it was exciting to take chances and sometimes we did well and sometimes we didn't do so well. But the show was always popular. I mean, what was interesting to me about Oz was because the first season we were shooting it, I mean, we were, you know, the actors were so tremendous on the show. They were so gifted and so courageous, willing to try stuff, willing, you know, pushing me to go past where I was. And they And the whole first season we were shooting it, we would walk around going, well, we're having a great time, but who's going to watch this? And when the series premiered and it was so successful for HBO, now granted, when Sopranos came by a few years later, that was even more successful for them. But we sort of did lay the groundwork for the appetite of the HBO audience.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. As I said, you know, there was HBO had to give people something worth paying for. So what they did then, that was what the wise move they made, was paying money to good writers.
Well, that's and trusting the writer.
Yeah.
Trusting the writer, saying, you know, we're going with you and your vision. We're not going to try to second guess you. The other thing that they did, which most networks don't do, is there was no brand. In other words, they weren't doing five versions of the same cop show. They were doing Oz and then Sopranos and then Six Feet Under. You know, there's nothing about any of those shows that's the same.
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
And Curb Your Enthusiasm and Sex and the City.
So different to everything else on HBO.
But I mean, to have the courage to say, this isn't about offering the same thing five times. This is about offering five completely different things that are going to, you know, completely surprise and titillate and delight an audience. It was an exciting time.
And of course, because of their success, the other cable networks followed suit, mm-hmm. and eventually the free-to-air networks had to follow suit. I mean, we've now got a show like Hannibal on NBC, which probably 10 years ago would have been unheard of.
Absolutely unheard of. But that's also in part because Bob Greenblatt, who ran Showtime, left Showtime to go run NBC. So he brought a cable sensibility to the programming schedule on NBC, which you know, they needed, because they were sort of running out of steam at that point.
Yeah, but with all this quality television, as I said, you know, it's for viewers, it's a golden age at the moment. Mm-hmm. We're spoiled for choice. There's actually too much.
There's too much.
Good TV
I agree.
To keep up with.
I agree.
But what's it like for writers?
It's tremendous. It's tremendous because when I started out, there were three networks, and now there's so many venues, and you can tell so many different stories. You can tell a serialized story, you can tell an episodic story, you can tell a story that takes place right now, you can tell a story that takes place 200 years from now, you can tell a story that took place 200 years ago. And those sort of things weren't available when we started with St. Elsewhere. They were basically, you know, do a cop show, do a medical show, and maybe a lawyer show. And that was pretty much the menu. And now you look at shows like House of Cards or The Americans or Homeland that they live in their own universe, and it's really quite extraordinary. From a writer's point of view, it's extraordinary to be able to, for there to be no restrictions on where your mind can go to create a television show.
Yeah, and what about, we're starting to see a move towards shorter seasons as well. You know, the traditional 24, 26 episode season is now contracting to, I mean, Homeland and shows of its kind do 12, I think. The first season of True Detective did 10, second season is going to be 8.
Yeah.
Do you think that's better for writers? It means they can focus their minds.
I think it depends on the concept of the show. I think there are certain shows that thrive at 26 episodes. And I think there are certain shows that the intensity of them needs the release. You need to stop watching it after 10 episodes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You need to let it alone for a while and go, okay, I'll watch the second season, but I hope it's not starting tomorrow, because the commitment to it is so different. You know, it's a real emotional commitment to those more kind of specialized shows.
Yeah. But of course, the way we consume television has changed a lot as well. You know, once upon a time, you know, if a show was on at 7 o'clock on a Monday night, you'd be sitting in front of your television at 7 o'clock on a Monday night. Now, you can watch what you want, when you want, and if you miss a show, there's a million different ways to get hold of it.
And I think that's tremendous. I, you know, to me, it's like when a book comes out, and you may buy the book and you may read it all in 3 days. But I'm a slower reader, so I may take a month to read it. You enjoy reading it, bam, I enjoy reading it nice and slowly, letting it reveal itself. The hard part is when we're having a conversation about it and I'm saying, don't tell me, don't tell me, don't tell me, don't tell me, don't tell me. So it's changed the conversation, what we used to call water cooler conversation. Now it's blogging and texting
Tweeting.
And tweeting. But, you know, back then it was you would go into the office the next day and have a conversation about a television show. Now it's while the show's going on, you know, it's being talked about.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks. Great.